Here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're here talking about car and car repair issues, and you're always welcome to join us if that's what you'd like to do. All you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we'll take your call, and what's going to happen is you're going to call, and Gil's going to say, KK Antique, and you're going to give him your name, and he's going to put you in queue, and then he says in my headphones, he says, so-and-so is next, and that's how we do it, 602-508-0960. I've got guests here on the show just before Christmas, and Bob and Ellen from Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School, are here with us. Together, we probably have close to 80 to 100 years of auto repair experience.
Right, at close, yeah, real, yeah, close.
And so we've been around. What do you remember the first kind of car you not necessarily worked on, because we were kind of young back then, but the first one that you looked underneath the hood and said, wow.
Oh, that was my 48 Ford.
Okay.
Yeah.
Flathead?
Yeah, flathead.
Okay.
Yeah. And two-door coupe. It was a running son of a gun.
And so that was in high school, maybe?
Yeah, actually before that.
Okay.
We were on a farm, and I finally got permission to use that. And I was out. In fact, I found that I could chase coyotes with it real well.
Yeah.
Out in the fields.
Yeah.
So we had a ball until I hit a ditch. But
yeah.
You know,
it launched pretty good, though, didn't it?
Very good.
Went up in the air.
But my dad made me put it back together. That's the problem.
Okay. All right. But we all have those stories where our dad had to straighten us up and make us fly right.
Yeah.
And inevitably the lesson was don't do that again.
Well, but just don't get caught.
Well, yeah, well, that was the key there, is don't get caught. So we started in 68, and you had to be in a little bit before us.
Not much. Actually, 67.
Okay.
When I first started, actually, with Larry Harker.
Okay, and that's starting working on cars.
Right.
And in 68, I started with Ken Vivian at a gas station, a Shell station at Broadway and Priest in Tempe. Mm. And I was in high school. And so I'm a year or two different than you, I think.
Yeah. Well, right before I went to work there, I was at Hempelman's Auto, working in the machine shop.
Okay.
And I learned grinding cams and all the fun parts of putting engines together at that time. So I've
been around.
We've been there 54 years now, Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
Yeah.
54 or 55 years.
Is there anybody in the Phoenix area that's under the same management team that you guys are in that with that kind of longevity?
I don't think so.
There was, who was the guy in the transmission?
O'Kelly?
No. He was at all the meetings. In fact, he just retired, and he was about 76 or 77 when he
transmission.
Retired.
Was it Bob at Quality?
That's it.
Okay, he passed.
Oh, did
he? Yeah, he passed, yeah. Yes, and he was. Well, Mike and Leon at Tri-City, they're retired now, and they've since sold. But they were around for a very long time, because when I was a kid and I blew up a four-speed where I missed second gear, and they put it back together for me and got me out of trouble.
Oh.
And so Mike and Leon from Tri-City Transmission, we have Bob Jones from Quality Transmission. We're the old-time guys. Bob Stewart was a gas station guy in Tempe. Mm-hmm. These are all guys in Tempe. Al Kitts and his brother Alvin, those were guys. Oh. Ronnie's, and then Schumann's.
Oh, yeah.
And now Ron Schumann works for Parts Authority, our parts vendor. And so he's our rep. But went back in the days, Ronnie Schumann was the king of hot rods in my world.
Right.
And in the Tempe area, perhaps even Mesa as well.
Yeah. Remember the days at the Beeline?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was fun. And you hoped that when you drove out the Beeline, which seemed like it was 100 miles away from Phoenix,
that you could drive back.
That you could drive back. See how we think? You're hoping you can get there under your own power and get home under your own power.
Yeah.
But how many times did we as kids in high school at Beeline Dragway watch cars just literally self-destruct at the light
many a time.
At the beginning or the middle of the track or whatever?
I think that's where we were into the founding of all the new rules.
Yeah, well, there was no rules.
Scatter shields.
Now, the scatter shield, I want to explain for those that don't know. Around the back of the engine, there's the flywheel, a very big piece of metal that rotates, and clutches and stuff like that. Well, when you blew the clutch up, it would blow the bell housing up, and there was always a chance that you were going to take lower leg destruction. You were going to have some problem with your feet.
You were going to hurt.
So then they came up with a scatter shield. Mm-hmm. Was that what it was called?
Yeah.
Scatter shield, which was a device that wrapped around it to hold contain. So when the clutch blew up at Beeline Dragway, two things. Number one, you didn't spread half of your clutch material down the track. And number two, you didn't take a chance of blowing up.
Well, that applied except for when Ellen was doing the shifting.
Oh, she did like the third to second?
Yes.
Oh.
That's when we were dating. Oh. That's when I think I sealed the deal. If he was going to let me blow his clutch, he was going to keep me.
Oh. She did a fine job on blowing the clutch. I shouldn't say that, the clutch.
That you didn't put the clutch in when I shift. That's what happened.
Oh, see, it always comes back to that, doesn't it? It's my fault.
Yes, absolutely. It is that way. It's that way. It's been that way.
Yeah.
Renee gets a traffic ticket, and she says, the reason I got a traffic ticket is because the cop recognized this car and the way you drive.
The way you drive. It's your fault.
Yeah. And so it's my fault. Oh, the pinstriper guy, Butch Tucker was his name. He was around there. The Schumanns were around there. Joe Rundle was around there. Who else was the other hot rod shop in town? Wilkie's. Was another one. And do you remember who you dealt with back then?
Well, my competitor was Goodyear Tire and Rubber.
Okay.
He had a 62 Chevy like mine.
Okay.
And we were always going back and forth. You know, 1 week I'd blow it up, and next week he'd blow it up.
Yeah.
But we were always trying to outdo each other.
I remember one time, Duke Talbert, who's since passed, but it was my very best friend in high school, he had a 396 and a Camaro, and Joe Rundle would put a tunnel ram with two 660s on it, so it was a powerful four-speed engine. So we're in front of a party, and he decides, and he's got big slicks on the back of it that we've got about 5 pounds of pressure in. So he dumps the clutch in first gear, I think at 10,000 RPM, I don't know. All I know is the flywheel bounced off the asphalt. The transmission blew up between the engine and the transmission, the bell housing. The disc went up the center. It went through his legs, and through the grace of God, didn't cut either one of them off, but it's spinning at 6,000 RPM. It goes across the dashboard, underneath the dash, and lands on my feet on the right side. It cuts the car in half. Now, here's what's going on in my mind. I feel all kinds of warm liquid all over me, and I'm thinking it's blood.
Okay? Oh, no.
But he cut the line to the oil pressure switch as the disc went underneath the dash. And so we have all this warm oil running all over our legs, and I'm thinking, I'm
dead.
Yeah. So it was, we didn't do that again. We weren't going to be dumping clutches. 602-508-0960, we have a caller, so we're going to take them early. How can we help you?
Say hello to Deborah.
Deborah, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I am interested in purchasing a hybrid, and I have my eye on three different ones, and I'd like your opinion.
Okay.
The first is a RAV4, Toyota RAV4. The next is a CR-V, and the third is a Toyota Venza.
Well,
and I have one more question. My other question is, with a hybrid, if I'm, you know, I know it runs on gas and the battery. So the battery charges as I'm driving, if I'm not mistaken. But if the batteries die or need to be replaced, must they be replaced for the car to be operational, or can it run solely on the fuel? And that's all. And I'll take your answer off the air.
Okay, you want to comment first?
Well, I guess my first question would be is, why are you buying a hybrid?
Well, I need to save money on gas.
Okay.
And what are they getting, around 40 a gallon or something, 40 miles a gallon?
Okay, that's kind of in... I guess you would say that's what everybody hopes for, but it absolutely depends on how many people are in the car and who's driving. Because I can assure you my wife would not get 40 in a hybrid. She's always late.
Okay.
She's always got a bunch of people in the car, including the grandkids, and the amount of beer in the trunk of her car is is immense. So,
hey, she sounds like my kind of girl.
And actually, I'm going to get in trouble. I should have said wine. I'm sorry. I should have said wine. Okay.
That's what I was
going to
say.
You know, the Toyota and the Honda and the Venza, all of those are good ones. I think it's for me, I think you should look at the dealers that you're going to be tied to for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years, and I would look at their ratings, and I would find the dealer that has the highest ratings, and I would probably use that as one of my criteria.
She going to buy a new?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Was one of her questions, she wanted to know if it run without the battery? Is that one of her questions? I know, because batteries can be pricey.
Well, I've been wrong before, but I'm pretty sure there's a battery for the gas motor and a battery for the hybrid. And I think there's a jump start capability between the two of them in most of the hybrids. But when you can't start your gas motor, it's a good question, but I'm quite sure you can use auxiliary power from the big hybrid battery to start the gas engine. I'm pretty sure.
Aren't they a little pricey too, and not like a normal battery for?
Well, the hybrid batteries are quite pricey.
Oh yeah,
pricey.
That's something people don't know.
$300, $400, $500, $600.
Yeah.
And then you have to program them. But when you're talking about 40 miles to the gallon, you're doubling what everybody else in the world is getting. Because few people can brag about 20 miles to the gallon. So if, in fact, you get 40, there is some of that money is in your pocket. So when you have to buy the battery, some of it's going to come out. So I'm not against hybrids. We service hybrids. You guys service hybrids,
service
too? Most of my customers seem happy. I'll tell you what I do know, Bob, just between you and me. They would never, just a minute, Bob and I are talking. They never have anything to say about them that's bad, and I think it's because they don't want to admit it. but they are, I must tell you, the people with the hybrid, and I have quite a few of them that we service, are very happy with the cars, but I also think that most of them are going to be city driving to and from, pick up the kids, to and from the grocery store, to and from the tennis club, that kind of stuff. I don't think these people are hauling a trailer to Payson. So,
I'm in real estate, so I'm on the road a lot, and 90% of the time it's only me in the vehicle, and I only have a half a case of wine. So.
Oh, okay. But when she talks about that, good. you are the perfect person for a hybrid as a realtor. You are and I'm not being derogatory. I'm saying you go to a place and you stop and you're there for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour. Then you go to another place and you stop. So when you have that stop and go kind of atmosphere, the hybrid is appropriate for you.
Yeah, I agree. Because so many of our customers are in that position. But I have a few that buy it that it's just not the right car for them.
Exactly, exactly.
Right.
And
well, right
see when
now,
you
right now.
What I see is I go up and down from the mountains all the time, and I see the hybrids, and they're looking at their dashboard, and they're looking at the fuel gauge, and they're having to plan the next 10, 15, 20, 30 miles. I need to, go slower. I need to charge this. I need to do that. It's a big video game if you're going to use it in that environment, but that's not you because you're going to plug it in every night. So, no, I don't.
No.
So let me ask you this, Bob. Between the Honda, the Toyota, and the is it a Nissan Venza?
Personally, on those three, pick out what looks good to you.
Yeah, the color and the and the price. I'd shop because I don't think she's gonna lose.
No.
So, okay. Well, Deborah.
Wait a second.
Okay.
I'm not going to plug it in every night. I didn't think I had to plug it in every night. I thought it was a dual system where the battery got charged when I was driving it, so it didn't have to get plugged in.
I'm not sure, and I can't be 100% sure, but I think that there, you decide to use it as an all-electric vehicle for 2 or 3 days in a row, then somehow or another we're going to have to charge that battery up down the road. And I think it's an easy connection. I don't think it's like a Tesla where you have to have a infrastructure brought in and rewired. But I think it's something that's a common connection that you shouldn't have problems for. But if you're going to use all electric, you're going to have to plug it in someday to charge it. Other than that, you're going to have to drive to you're going to have to drive to Flagstaff and back, or on a flat road from here to Tucson and back to charge it, and that defeats the purpose of a hybrid. Anyway, we got to run, Deborah. Thank you very much for the thought-provoking question, and that was great to start the show. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and there's five of them. 602-508-0960. Well, it's really Gil's fault. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we have one line available, or one line taken. Bob, I'll get to you in just a second. I want to tell you about Kurt's Auto Repair. They were here last week, and Kurt and his group of guys are good, smart guys. They're independent, family-owned and operated. They were just recognized as a Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner, and they opened their doors in 1987, and they're at I-17 and Bell Road, northeast corner, and he's a really good shop that I feel comfortable in referring you to because I know that they can fix it, and if they can't, they'll tell you why, and they'll treat you fairly. So that's Kurt's Automotive, I-17 and Bell. So you have something that Bob and you have written, and it's because it's Christmas, and that this is what you're grateful for.
Yes, you know, we have been blessed all of our life, and of course we have two lovely daughters and five grandkids, and that we're very proud of. Our youngest daughter just got her doctorate and worked over 3 years for it, and a lot of long hours, and we're very, very proud of her. And of course our oldest daughter is with Bank of America for about over 26 years, I believe, and doing well. And our grandkids, you know, Brianna, our oldest one, is working on being a nurse practitioner. She's working on a clinical. So, and Taylor, I guess we want to just kind of recognize them and say, hey, we love them. And Taylor's in the dental, she does, I think, posting, or I'm not really
dental
sure.
Assistant, yeah.
Yeah, and Christian working for Palo Verde, you know, Little Bob. I call him Little Bob because they're so much alike, and he's very mechanical and stuff. And Bella in college, you know, working good, which is Jeremy, as you know, is our main mechanic at our auto repair shop, which we're very, very proud of him. What,
yeah,
almost
20? He's been with us 21 years now.
Yep.
Going on 22, I think you'd probably years, say. Yeah. You should get it right.
Truly is a wizard.
Oh, my God. We didn't know so when amazing. We hired him so young when we would, what we were going to do with him, because he was just new out of, you know, college and stuff, and now we don't know what we'd do without him. Gracie, his youngest daughter, they like to go a couple of rounds. We think she's going to be a good lawyer.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But everybody, we're proud of him and want to bless everybody. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas. I know we've been through a lot with COVID and everything, but, you know, we always look at, you know, what we've got and how happy we are. And we're good Christians that we hope that everybody has a blessed holiday.
And that's the nice part about it is we have a lot. My family, like your family, has a lot to be thankful for. And a lot of it has to do with the people that work for us that make us look good and do good jobs on cars.
Oh, yes.
And raise their hands when they make a mistake as opposed to try to hide it from you. So those are good things. But, no, that's I didn't see any auto repair technicians in there, but I can guarantee you this much. Somebody might want to talk to Grandpa and Grandpa down the road sometime and convert over to an operation that that involves management, people, cause and effect analysis, repair, all that kind of stuff, because none of my kids ever showed an interest, and as you know, Andy and Alan are running it. So it in their early times.
You know what, I better say Randy, because he's our son-in-law, and he's the only one I didn't say that he's in charge of the softball, you know, and traveling softball league. You know, I don't get nervous until I start talking about my family.
Oh, no, that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of got the ball rolling, and I think I do good otherwise, but then I guess it hits your heart because you love him.
Well, and I'll tell everybody else, Bob brought this, and then he just dropped it on you about 2.5 minutes ago, and he said, would you say this, and he wrote this down in little bitty writing that I can't read, and so it's really Bob's fault, but we're going to give him a break.
I'm
and see. We're going to
make a note.
Yeah. Bob, and you have 100% of our attention. How are you doing today?
Morning.
Good morning.
I'm shopping for new tires, and I'm trying to compare, you know, the uniform tire quality grade.
Uh-huh.
And, for instance, I'm looking at a Continental Pro contact tire, which has a uniform tire quality grade of 540 AA,
okay,
which is $106.99 wherever I'm happen to be shopping online.
Okay.
And then the Continental True Contact has an 800 AA rating, and that's $120. That's only $14 more, but that goes from a 540 rating to an 800 rating.
Okay, you're talking about
how much stock do you put in that?
Well, you're talking about Okay, wait, ho. We can't continue to lose the audience in this conversation. On the side of a tire, there's a number, and then there's two grades, and the number is a tread wear. It's a number that represents the tread wear life, what the normal person's going to get. And then we have traction and temperature, and each one of those gets an A, B, or C. So your tires, you're talking about 400, 500, 600 on the tread wear, and probably an AA after it. Am I right?
Correct.
Okay. You might be the only person in the world that actually looks at those numbers, because it has everything to do with who's driving the car, and if the grandkids are just new drivers, it has to do with whether you're going in a straight line or you're delivering mail. It has everything to do with the operation of the tire. I've never spent a minute of my life trying to figure out tread wear numbers, and I try to tell most people that is a huge waste of time, because there is nothing in my imagination that number is going to help you determine anything. A tire that's softer is going to have a lower number. It's going to be stickier. It's going to be softer. It's going to give you a better ride. So the lower the tread wear number is, sticky, softer, and it gives you a good ride. The higher the number, the tire is harder. It's not going to give you a good ride. And so there's the offset. So I can't explain a $14 difference between those two tread wear numbers. I think you should be pricing free rotations, tire repairs. I think you should, how much do I write my check out for? I think you look at the bigger picture as opposed to just trying to use the traction tread wear and temperature numbers. That's my opinion.
So one more question. Don't you think most people just buy the tires, whoever's giving you $100 back if you buy four tires when you walk in the tire store?
No, because Discount Tire is one of the biggest guys in town, and they don't do that. So, no, I don't think that the people, and that's okay if they do that. Those kinds of, I think most of us are old enough to recognize that that's kind of a joke, that there's no free money in this tire transaction. And there's a lot of places that will give you free rotations, and that's so we can check your brakes, and we can check any other things that you may need. So the free rotation is tagged along with, look at how many times we get to see that car during the time that car is on the road.
Wasn't he wanting to buy these online?
Yeah, that's another problem. If you have a warranty issue, that could cause a problem if the tire had a tread separation or something like that. So I think here's the most important question to me on tires. Mark, what does your wife have in her car? What does your daughter have in her car? What do you have on your truck? And the answer is Toyos. Do you sell Toyos? Yes, we do. Why? We like the company. We like the tire. We like the performance of the tire. And we like the wide variety of all the tires that they make. Yeah, but Toyos made in Japan. No, it isn't. It's made in Atlanta, Georgia. So those are the kinds of conversations that we have, and that's the reason why my particular shop chooses to do that. When we come back, Bob, do you sell tires?
No.
So you pass them to somebody else, and who's the tire company that you typically pass them to?
Most likely Discount.
Discount. Yeah, I do too. I work for Discount, and I've seen them. The tie goes to the runner more times than I'm comfortable with respect to the customer.
Yeah.
But it's their money and their tires, and I'm kind of proud to be a part of them. So welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Bob and Ellen from Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School, are here. And then this is our pre-Christmas show. And I'll turn off my speaker so you don't have to listen to that. Gil was getting ready to counsel me about the noise behind it. And I'm going to just pull your mic up here. I want it right up there. All righty. And as we go through this, we're here talking about cars and car repair and stuff like that. You can put that underneath your arm, just like this. There you go. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and let's go to David. David, thank you for holding through the break. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I'm in a situation where I was in a car accident, and my fault. I didn't have all had liability, so. I went to my mechanic, and he recommended this guy. And so when I went down there, he could fix the back end and needs repair and on the side, on the back side, on the side of the passenger side and the back of the vehicle. And so it's a Camry 2001. And he has the car ever since. And I don't get much feedback from him. And he's had it for 5 weeks and it's still not fixed.
Well, I wish you'd have called me before you did all this.
So do I.
Yeah.
But my mechanic, he's an honest guy, but he doesn't know this guy is dishonest.
Well, okay. First of all, your 2000 Camry probably has a book value of $3,000 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
There are these kinds of guys that work out of their backyard. How much money does he have of yours so far?
Nothing right now. He's had it for 5 weeks.
Okay. Have you gone over to his house? Have you gone over to his house?
No, he actually has a business.
Okay.
An area there.
Okay.
But he's not. What can I say? It's been taking a long time. He's not using the parts of the company, Toyota. He's yards and things like that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you one more time. Listen carefully. Is it taken apart yet? Has he started working on it? Have you gone by since you dropped it off, or he went and got it? Or is it just sitting there in the parking lot?
He's working on it, but it's taking forever.
Okay. I can't help you with the taking forever. There are part problems out there, but I don't know about a Camry. We're not going to buy any new parts from the dealership on your Camry. We're going to find most of them in wrecking yards, so I can't imagine that. I can't really help you. I can't really guide you. I don't know what the deal was. I don't know how bad the wreck is, but I can tell you this much. I get at least 3 of these calls a year. And in every single case, depending on whether they're level 1, 2, or 3, and you're kind of in level 2, your car's already gone, you've already got a relationship, and so you're on level 2, and number 3 is they deliver the car to you. All of these turn to bird crap. All of them do. The quality of the work isn't there. The price reflects something higher than the quality of work you paid for. Plus, you've got a car that's already been deemed a total. And the car is now, you're going to have a tough time ever selling the car, even for $1,500, because it's got a tainted title because it's been involved in a crash. And so it was a bad idea. You might just rearrange the deck of cards on the table and ask him if he wants to buy your car. And that way he could fix it up and sell it himself. So I would think that would be one of your options, is just go talk to him and say, hey, would you give me $2,000 for the car, and you can keep it, and then you can fix it, and then you can sell it, and I would then take that $2,000 and go buy something else. But I really can't help you because you are so outside of the boundaries of the group that you're just way out there in Never Never Land, and there's no rules. You're in the wild west of car repair. And you have an agreement with a guy you've never met before or done business with, and he's made promises to you that he's not keeping, and they're not in writing, and so you're just kind of in a really bad way. So I haven't any advice. The only advice I can give it, either sell it to him, or go get it, take it someplace else. So I got to run, David. Good luck to you, buddy. Good luck. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. A couple of places in town. As you well know, folks, there's a lot, maybe you don't, but there's a lot of auto repair shops that have been recently purchased. There's a tire store that just sold 4 shops. There's another tire store that sold 3 shops. There was another tire store that sold 3 shops, and these are general repair plus tire stores. So, and then there's an independent shop by close by where I'm at who just recently sold, and it's kind of like they walk in, they write him a check, and he walks out. This is going to throw the whole industry into a big tizzy because with the kind of money, they're paying millions and millions and millions of dollars for the shop and the land and the equipment and the employees and the inventory. And obviously, they're going to have to recoup some of that funds. And the only way to do it that Mark can think of is raise the prices and raise the labor rates and raise the pricing for the parts. But you're not going to find that at Auto Dynamics. They're up in Sun City, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. A great place to go if you live in that area. So when people say in the northwest part of town, I have Auto Dynamics, and again, it's a Grand Avenue just west of 99th Avenue, and then, of course, I have Larry Harker's Auto as well. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. It's after the hour of 10 o'clock, and Bob and Ellen from Harker's Automotive are here with us, and we're just going to move that up like that, and we're here talking about cars, and you're more than welcome to join us, and I'll turn off my speaker so my echo goes away. But in the middle of the breaks, folks, I have so much work to do with the clock and writing stuff down, and so that's the reason why I seem like I'm frazzled, because I'm actually busier during the breaks than I am during the show. We talked about good shops, and automatic transmission exchange has been around since 1968. Phil and his staff are really good at diagnosing. I'm looking at the word diagnostics, and I'm diagnosing a transmission problem if you can demonstrate the problem. So if you've learned how to make it happen and you've got a transmission problem, then perhaps drive by and stop or call Automatic Transmission Exchange and ask them if they can, if you can bring it by 40th Street in Washington and have them have one of their technicians, senior technicians, go with you and have you show them what the car's doing, because that's what really works well. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. It's also, the abbreviation is ATE, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Let's go to Art. Art, good morning. How can we help you?
Morning. Okay. I have a 2002 Nissan Xterra 3.3 six-cylinder supercharged. Okay. Here's the issue. Well, it's burning oil. Okay. I checked spark plugs. I did a compression test. Number two and number four, the spark plugs were fouled. But also, two, I checked the compression, and it's throwing me off. 120, but on number two and number four that are burning, it's 60. But here's the issue here. When I first crank it over a couple times, it'll pop up to 120. But if I get the car running, it drops down to 60.
Okay. Well, it could be rings, it could be valve guides, valve seats. There's just so many things that...
First thing to address is the compression.
Yeah, well, that's what I did. Mm-hmm. It's at 60.
Okay,
so,
did you do a wet...
The pistons are 120.
Wait a minute. Did you do a wet-dry compression test?
Oh, wet-dry.
Yeah, that's where you do it dry, and then you squirt some oil in the cylinder, because we're going to check and see if we can seal the rings with some oil in the cylinder, and then redo the test. That will tell us if the compression is leaking through one of the valves or if it's leaking through the rings.
Okay, so how does that work? If it's leaking through the ring and I do a wet test, well, then it'll seal it.
Well, you'll go from 60 to 80 or 90 or 100 if you squirt some oil in there. I'm talking about... You know, four squirts of oil. I'm not talking about putting a quart of oil in there.
No, yeah.
So you have to do a wet dry. That eliminates the rings. And so if it fixes the rings, then you have a ring problem, and that's the answer to your question. A wet dry test will tell you the answer to your question. But it'll also tell you if you've got valve problems, because you're only going to lose compression at the rings or at the valves.
Yeah, and that's what I've never run across this one before, and I don't know if it's happened before, but I just noticed that. I had my son cranking the engine a couple of times, and it popped up to 120. But if we started it and ran it, because I held, I would discharge the pressure and then do it running, and then it would drop down to 60.
There's nothing in your running test that's valid. I don't know where you got that. There's nothing I've ever been taught that you run a compression test when the motor's running. That there are no parameters in my world for a running compression test.
Okay, well, I'm an amateur, so.
Oh, no, I understand. Well, I need to express to you that that's something I've never done before in my life. And we would probably just use air. We would probably bring the piston up on top dead center and lock the crankshaft down and put some air in the spark plug hole and go to the air intake, the mouth of the throttle body, and listen for air. Go to the exhaust pipe and listen for air, or the oil filler cap and listen for air, because it's going to come out of one of those three places, the exhaust, the intake manifold, or the dipstick. So, I mean, it's going to come out.
It's pretty valid. On going to wet and dry, because that tells you whether it's a valve problem or a ring problem.
Yeah.
And that's what you really need to do right now is determine those two, so you know whether to just pull the heads off of it or you need an engine.
Well, and one of the things he's talking about is he's puzzled by the 60 and the 120. Mm-hmm. I'm saying the 60 number we have to throw out, because that's a running. He's trying to do a difference between cranking and running.
Oh, I thought the cranking was 60.
Okay. It could be, but we would expect the compression to come up once the motor starts running. So we haven't really done that. The oil on the spark plugs, it would almost have to be either valve guides or piston rings broken.
That's only two ways it can get in there.
That's right. So how many miles are on it?
150.
Okay. Do you drive it?
My son drives it.
How old is your son with the supercharged motor?
He drives pretty conservative.
Okay.
Well, with me anyway, and from what I've seen him down the street, he drives pretty. He's not like speeding and racing.
Okay. Well, just for the rest of the people out there, you got a supercharged motor, which is a hot rod engine. And that car is very, very fast and very, very powerful because we're sticking a bunch of air into the combustion chamber and this car performs much better. And when we do that, when we start adding a tremendous amount of air to the combustion chamber, then that's when we start running into ring problems and valve seat problems and stuff like that. So those kind of two go hand in hand. But to answer your question, we can't tell you what's wrong with it with the information you've given us, but a wet dry compression test would tell you whether it's rings, whether it's above the head gasket or below the head gasket. That's the answer.
Would a blow by have any significance? Or it would do it either way with the valve problem or the ring problem?
No. The blow by is only going to be rings. So if you pull if you get it in operating temperature and you park it and you open up the valve, the oil filler cap on the valve cover, and all of a sudden it looks like a diesel choo-choo train, then that's rings.
Okay.
That's rings.
I was looking for guidance, and thank you very much.
Okay. Just let me offer you one thing. What kind of oil are you putting in it?
We're putting synthetic, I believe it's 10, 40.
Okay. If I were you, I'd just go to a straight 30 weight and see if I could save those two spark plugs. And with the many miles as you've got on it, a 30 weight would be an appropriate oil, and it would be for 3,000 miles just to see what the spark plugs look like at the end of 3,000 miles. So if the 30 weight fixed your oil consumption problem and didn't foul the spark plugs and gave you good compression, then that would be something that could last another 50 to 100,000 miles.
Okay, and by the way, another thing. It all started. I mistakenly put the 510 or 515.
520.
I put it in my Dodge caliber, and I bought it from Costco, and I accidentally used one of those jugs, and I put it in my son's car when I changed his oil.
You're wrong about that having an effect on anything like this at all. That's just not true.
Okay.
It's not. Yeah, that you're mistaken. Your oil. It's one quart diluted by four other quarts of oil, and there's no way in God's green earth that something's going to happen because you put in a 1040 and you ended up putting a 520 in it. Or you can bounce around those viscosity all you want, but that's not going to have anything to do with the problem that you got now.
Yeah, it was just coincidence.
Yeah, I think so. Well, good luck to you. Thank you very much for that. And let me see where we're at on time. Mike, you're up next. How can we help you?
Mike dropped, so we'll wait for his callback.
Oh, okay. Mike, I'm sorry I didn't get to you, but you can call back because Gil tells me there's nobody on the line. And anybody else that wants to call and ask a question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I say a third of the work that comes into our shop is a conversation that we just had right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the hardest part, certainly for me as I get older and crankier, is the issue of, it's kind of like, here's the problem and here's what I think you should do to fix the problem. And that's the most uncomfortable conversation at the front counter I think that we experience as the auto repair technician, because we don't really need the path. Once we determine the problem, we know the path.
Yeah.
And so many times, I don't know where they're getting their information, but I suspect it's from those auto parts experts at the auto parts store who can read a code and they can tell them what parts they need when you and I can't, and we're master technicians with 40 and 50 years of experience.
Or YouTube.
Or YouTube. Oh, God. I'm going to tell you something. YouTube just drives me crazy. If those guys were as good as they think they are, they'd be working for me for $100,000 to $150,000 a year and have Saturdays and Sundays off.
Oh, it's sometimes hard to unexplain those answers that they give. You know? Well, I know it's this. I read it. You know, mm-hmm. I go, okay, but it doesn't work.
Yeah. The problem with reading the code is everybody thinks because you have an oxygen sensor code, it's an oxygen sensor problem. And, of course, the parts houses would like to sell you the oxygen sensor because they're highly profitable and you more than likely have one and maybe two
and
or more.
And you can't return it.
And you can't return it. But and then at the end of the day, the oxygen sensor is tattling on what's going on in the exhaust. And so this young man doesn't know a 0.1 from a 0.5. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't know, he doesn't have serial stream data. So we need to know, is the oxygen sensor actually wrong, or is it telling us the truth and we're running lean because the fuel filter's plugged, or we're running rich because the fuel pressure regulator is, diaphragm is bad. So somebody has to go track that backwards. It just drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you what, my panties get so tight and they get pulled up so hard, I can take the leg holes and put them over my shoulders. Can I give you that picture again?
You know what? No. We get women to come in, and they look on YouTube. Somebody tells them what it is, and they look on it, and she says, well, I think I could do this, but I better not try it. But they tell us how to do it. Yeah, because they've looked it up on the computer on YouTube.
This is my analogy. My dog all of a sudden has no energy and only eats half of his food, and his poops are a little different than normal. And you YouTube that, and then go ahead and do what everyone thinks is wrong with your dog, when in reality he ate a half of an apple core that's stuck in the exit ramp, and all of this other stuff. No one can properly diagnose the health of your dog over the internet any more than they can properly diagnose your car. So, I think in time this will get better. But it doesn't seem to be anytime soon it's going
to
get better.
I think what we try to get across to our customers is the fact that we need to do the testing. You know, it's not like a light comes on, it tells you it's a bad part. It could be connection. Yeah. It could be computer sending the wrong signal. It's like going to a doctor. You know, you're not going to have him just pull your appendix because you got a pain there. He runs tests. We run tests. Cars are not like they used to be.
We've gotten used to using your terminology of the code gives you what state you're in.
Yes.
Now you need to know what city you're in, what street you're on, what house you're in. You got to narrow it down closer. And that's the reason for all these misdiagnosis that we're getting into.
Yeah.
People assume that's... Excuse me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Assume that we're in trouble with by not just changing the part that the code was.
Well, and that's part and parcel of why I came up with that with respect to it just tells us what state we're in.
Yeah.
And the problem is we still got to find the city, the street, the address, and the numbers and stuff. So we know that the problem is a rich condition. The car is running with way too much fuel. We don't know where the fuel's coming from. Is we have a leaking injector? Do we have a crankcase full of oil that's contaminated with gasoline because we have a bad fuel pressure diaphragm? We have all of these possibilities, and the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store doesn't have a clue as to all the possibilities, but there's hundreds of shops in Phoenix that have already walked all those paths and does.
Well, the newer vehicles, we have to do testing. It's not like you open the hood anymore and you say, oh, this is wrong, that's wrong. It takes sometimes hours of testing for us.
And not only that is the car can talk to you, but it can only tell you what it sees.
Right.
But it sees that it's running rich. The car has too much fuel and it needs more air. But that, how many different possibilities can that be? The PCV valve hose can have a hole in it. You can have an intake vacuum leak. You can have a problem in your air conditioning controls behind the dash that's causing a vacuum leak that's causing the lean condition. So how are you going to explain to the customer that the kid at the auto parts store says you need all four O2 sensors when we fix the problem underneath the dash?
Right.
That's the hard part, and that happens a lot. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to come back in about 6 minutes, and we're going to do another hour of car talk, and you're welcome to join us. The phone number is 602-508-0960. I'm with Bob and Ellen from Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. My name's Mark Salem, and we'll be back in a minute.
This was a...
Buddy. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and if you'd like to join us, you can. The lines, four of them are open. We've got Chad on one, and we're going to take him in just a second. 602-508-0960. There's a couple of shops in town that I want you to know that I think the world of, and Blackwell Automotive is at 40th and Greenway, and I've known Tom for many years, and I know he knows right from wrong, and he's good at what he does, and the good shops are not shy about raising their hand and saying, I've never seen this problem before in my life. I may not be your best shop, but so-and-so over there. He works on these cars predominantly, and he would probably be a better set of eyes than I would. That's the mark of somebody who's really got gray hair and been around the block a few times and recognizes that he's not going to be a perfect technician for every car on the road. That's Blackwell. In Mesa, I only have one shop in Mesa, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, been around since 1970, but I've known Brian and Thelma's families since the late 60s and early 70s because we were all in the gas station business and I was a gas pump jockey. So I know that they know what they've been around. Plus, they've been around that car repair venue all of their lives. So Thompson's is on Main Street, just east of Stapley. They've been around a very long time. They have ASE-certified technicians. And Brian and Thelma, all you have to do is meet them, and you'll know why I like them so very much. They are really good, honest people, and they can fix cars. And the good shops are not shy about raising their hand just saying, I need a fresh pair of eyes on this because I can't find the problem. The difference there is if the problem exists, we should be able to find it. But if it's an intermittent problem, sometimes the only option is you have to wait until it gets worse and easier to find. That's all there is to it. You just have to wait till it gets worse, because the option, the other side of the coin, is let's start throwing parts at it until we fix it. And, boy, that's going to get really expensive. Are you with us? All right, I'm going to say it again.
I'm here.
There you go. There you go. All right.
Get it back.
It's my fault that you didn't have a voice, okay? Let's go to Chad. Chad, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, I got a question for you. I typically change my own oil. I go to Costco and buy the Mobile One full synthetic. Was there the other day. They were out of the 530 that I used, but they had a Costco full synthetic for $29 for 10 quarts. Do you know anything about that?
I can tell you that there's only
oil.
There's only four companies in the United States that make oil. So yours came from Shell, Mobil, Exxon. I always forget the last one. Shell, Mobil, Exxon, and one other one.
Richfield?
No. Gosh darn it.
Chevron?
Yes. Thank you very much. It is Chevron. It is Chevron. So those guys make everybody else's oil. I'll tell you what I tell everybody publicly. Now, I sell Chevron oil. There is a perception from the kind of people that typically are my customers, especially the older gray-haired guys, that Chevron is a premium oil, and I believe it is. So I sell Chevron because I like the relationship, and I like the idea that people think I'm pouring a top-quality oil. But I'm here to tell you that the same oil is probably in other cans at other prices. And so if I were you, and if it's the same viscosity, the one you're likely to have and it's cheaper, I see no reason in not taking advantage of the discount.
Oh, okay. Oh, that sounds good.
I can tell you this much. There's nothing in your motor that has the ability to tell the difference in oil. Not viscosity or brand or detergent values or pour points or oxidation points. Nothing. Your engine doesn't know. You can put horse pee in that motor, and it won't know the difference. Might make a difference in exhaust smell or something, but that's about it. But no, it's not gonna know the difference. And frankly, when I'm gonna do a tractor that might hold 30 quarts of oil, rather than go to the shop and try to get 30 quarts in, you know, some gallon containers, I'll probably just stop by a discount house and just buy a whole bunch of oil from them, and I don't have any problem with that.
Oh, okay. Hey, one last question. I was always told before you change your oil, you run your engine, you heat it up, and then you drain it out. But I was wondering, like a 530 oil, that means cold it's 5 weight viscosity and hot it's 30. Wouldn't it come out better if it was cold, if it was only at 5 weight versus 30?
No. It doesn't change viscosity. It changes flow properties. It flows like a 5-weight when it's cold, and as the motor gets warmer, it begins to flow like a 30-weight. It has the properties of flow. There's a big difference there. And I've been trained by Chevron and Mobil as an oil expert, so I'm using terminology that they use, and it's easy to understand. The oil understands when it's 10 degrees, and it's going to flow like a 10-weight. But when you want the top end, you want it to be a flow of 20 or 30 or 40 or 50, I mean, peanut butter is 50. You might as well put Skippy in your engine if you want 50. But in any case, it's just the protection. The numbers represent the protection that it's going to provide. So a 5 weight is good to 30 below zero, and I suspect that Phoenix people are not going to see that for a while.
Yeah, we don't need that.
Yeah.
So recommend to warm it up before you change it.
I don't think let me change your question. Mark, have you ever spent any money repairing somebody's car because they drained their oil cold, like Mark does a lot of times? Do you know how long it takes to warm up 30 quarts of oil in a tractor? I might as well go from Payson to Pine and back. The answer to your question is, if you do it, if the oil's being changed warm more than 50% of the time, I have absolutely no problem with that. None whatsoever.
Okay, and what do you? How many miles per oil change on the full synthetic would you recommend?
Well, it's all backwards compatible. Okay, so everything is backwards compatible. I'll give it to you real clear. Conventional oil is 3,000 to 5,000 miles, always has been and will be. Semi-synthetic is 5,000 to 7,500, and synthetic is 75,000 to 15,000. So it depends on what kind of oil you use on what your oil interval can be. It has to do more to do with the oil than it does the car. Now, you ask me, I'm putting a synthetic in my diesel. It holds 12 or 14 quarts, and I'm running it right at 15,000 miles, and so I change it then. So that's what I'm doing on my truck.
All right.
All righty.
Well, I got 100,000 miles. I'd like to get at least another 50,000 miles out of this vehicle.
Okay. Okay. Hold on. Stick the straw in one ear and push it all the way to the other ear, because it has nothing to do with the oil you put in it. Bob, would it be fair to say that 99% of the time we do major engine work, it's because the driver has run it low on oil or overheated the hell out of it?
Yes.
Very much. We're done. We don't see them. They don't wear out anymore. The motor work we do, when I say to people, your engine's going to last as long as it wants until you overheat it or run it low on oil, because that's what we do. So it's not. I can't remember the last time I had a car come in with so much blow by that it looked like a fog machine for mosquitoes.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen anymore. Yeah, we've got 300,000 to 400,000 mile cars out there. And they've maintained them regularly, and as long as it's not a major problem.
What about our fleet accounts? They go to 500,000, 600,000, 700,000.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. You bring up a great point. We were looking at the Attorney General's office, asked us a couple years ago to give them a spread, and you can't believe the cars in our fleet that are at the 300,000 to 500,000 mile mark. Now, of course, we don't know if it's had a motor or not, but let's just assume it hasn't. Mm-hmm. Again, the bottom line is you get rid of them when you overheat the heck out of them, or they start puffing blue smoke and they foul spark plugs on every mile. Mm-hmm. Those are the two reasons.
It's always cheaper to fix what you have than to go out and buy new. You can't buy hardly new anymore anyways. They're all on back order, but they know how what it costs.
No. And so the idea is your 120,000, is that what you said? His was 120,000?
160.
That's nothing. Yeah. That's nothing. If you don't overheat it and run on oil, it'll do 300.
Just keep up the maintenance.
That's it.
Be kind to it.
Part of the oil change is checking the tires and the fluids and the belts and the hoses and driving it and stuff like that. That's part of the oil change. You can't just change the oil and say, okay, the car loves me, because the power steering could be low, the cooling system could be defective, and all that stuff. So part of this maintenance of taking care of your car has to do with the big circle that's included in the oil change. The oil change is checking all the fluids, the belts, the hoses, looking at the front end, looking at the tire wear, looking at the brakes, looking for exhaust leaks, looking for drips from the evaporator core. It's all of that stuff, an expert eye underneath the car looking to see, okay, well, this is something you got to deal with, and that's kind of what it's all about. Anyway, thank you very much, Chad. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, the lines are open still.
No, we have Jake who has a question.
Jake, good morning. How can we help you, Jake?
Good morning. I have a 2021 Jeep Grand Cherokee that has a warning light that says stop, start, not ready, cabin cooling or heating, which is obviously related to the auto start, but it's doing this whether the temperature is warm outside or cool outside, so I'm not sure what to make of it.
Well, I think the we keep track of the air in the temperature inside the car and the temperature outside the car. Now, I can tell you that my wife and I have this same problem, not with a 2021 Cherokee, but we have the same problem because she puts the temperature at 70 and outside it's 72, and so she's going to get air conditioning when she wants heat. And she's cold, so it's the question then becomes, which way is it? And I think what you're going to find is what I've found and what other people have found. You have to move the temperature up 2 or 3 degrees above or below where you want it to be to get it to act the way you want it to be. So you're not going to be able to split hairs and go from 72 to 73 or something like that. That's a range that's going to be nebulous to the computer.
Okay, thank you very much. Right. I appreciate it.
Good luck to you, Jake. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Strictly Diesel, Nate at Strictly Diesel. You just have to meet him and shake his hand to know that he knows diesels like not anybody I've ever met. You can take what I know about diesels and put on a dime, and it will take you a trampoline to put. That's how much information Nate has on the Chevys, the Dodges, and the Fords. He is just a great guy that knows diesels like really nobody else. So if you have a question, he does answer the phone, and he will call you back. But please be respectful of his time. He asked me to say that. So he can't be on the phone with you for a half an hour as you go through every single one of your concerns. It's really a matter of narrow it down to a couple of questions, and he's more than happy to help you out with that. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They're on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, just south of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak, and Nate's a really great guy. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. All you have to do is call us up, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I've got Bob and Ellen here from Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. And I've told the story many, many times about you guys having a BMW that I had sent there because he lived around the corner from you. Mm-hmm. And he had been told that he had this big problem that was thousands of dollars that needed to be replaced. And he had water leaking on the passenger side of the floorboard. And if I'm not mistaken, the drain at the evaporator case was plugged up with yuck. You unplugged the drain, washed it all out, cleaned it all up, and he was out of there for $100 to $200. I don't remember exactly what the number was, but it was stupid. Yeah. And they were going to replace everything behind the glove box to the tune of $2,000.
Yeah, the heater core, I think, is what they would do. Yeah, remember
and
that?
I remember feeling so great because, again, somebody in our industry stood up, did the right thing, and fixed the car. I don't know if he's ever come back, but I know that he loved you after he called me and told me. And I said to him, well, let's be fair to everybody. Call me in a couple of weeks and let me know if there's any more water on your floorboard. Yeah. And he didn't have to do that. All right, let's go to Rick. Rick, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, how's it going? 95 GMC pickup. I was at a stoplight, and the truck would die, so I had to keep giving it gas. You gave me the idea that it was possibly a vacuum leak. I took it in. They did the air regulator.
Mass airflow meter?
The gas. Mass airflow, yeah, and that didn't work. So they did a fuel filter, fuel pump, and everything, you know, in the gas tank. And it works, but the car will shudder at times, like it's missing a cylinder or something, and it really stinks. He adjusted the timing differently than when I had it, and I'm just wondering what I should have them look for when I bring it back.
I don't. You just made a hard left turn on me here in the middle of all of this,
know.
And I'm. We started off with
one problem and added about three parts to it,
and then you said something that he made it run richer. He made it run with more fuel, and I'm struggling with that because that's something that we typically don't do. And if it's a car that's, you know, from 95 on up, it's the last 25 years, it's computer controls the amount of fuel and stuff like that.
Correct.
So I'm not sure. What was the first symptom or what was the first problem you had? It died?
I was driving And if I'm driving down the street, it ran fine. If I'm driving on the highway, it ran fine. But when I got to a stoplight, it would die out.
Okay.
Sounds like an idle air control or something.
Okay. Well, first of all, think about this, okay? The fuel pump has to provide fuel to give the car to idle and run at 100 miles an hour, and in my wife's case, 150 miles an hour, okay? Mm-hmm. So the fuel pump, if your fuel pump was bad, how is it that you could do 60, but it wasn't capable of providing enough fuel at idle? Because the idle fuel is like this. Listen. And at 70 miles an hour, it's like more like a fire hose. So the fuel pump and the fuel filter have nothing to do with it dying at a traffic light at a stop. Nothing.
That's what I thought and said, but they had it, they were deep into it, and what do you do?
Well, you at the very beginning, next time, this is what you do. I don't want to spend any money on guessing. I want to just spend money on fixing. So you tell me what you're going to do, and it's not going to die at idle anymore. Tell me, Mark. Tell me what you're going to do. Bob, EGR valve that's sticking open.
Yeah, EGR valve, idle air control motor that's common.
A vacuum leak somewhere.
Yeah, because your vacuum is mainly at an idle.
Yeah. There's so many possibilities that can cause it to just die at idle. And, I mean, it can be a bad throttle position sensor that's dropping out on it.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So there's all this stuff going on in the background. But just next time, just tell them, I don't want to spend any money on guessing. I don't want to spend any money that's not going to fix the problem I brought it in for. I want you to focus on the fact that this thing dies, shudders, and then the engine dies at a traffic light.
Right. Well, now it's shuddering a lot.
Okay.
Like, you know, I'll be sitting, and it's not dying.
Sounds
out.
Like a misfire.
Like a misfire or something.
Okay. No one knows if they're related till we know what number two is. Now, it could very well be that in the process of, I'll give you a hypothetical situation, in the process of flushing the fuel injectors or something like that, they caused a problem with the fuel pressure regulator, which could cause a miss. But you just need to forget about the first half and go after the second half. At this particular point, it's missing. And you can demonstrate the miss. You can take the technician for a short ride, not to Tucson and back. Take a technician and show him. And then once you show him, then you trade places with him, and he drives the truck home, back to the shop.
Okay.
And so that's what I would do if I were you. I want you to become more involved in the repair and use common sense. Don't let him BS you with car repair jargon. Just,
right.
This is what I want you to fix. I'm going to show you what I'm talking about. Okay?
Right. I thought that they were throwing way too many parts, but now, like I said, when it's shuddering, you know, maybe there's a bad wire. Bad wire. Wires are old. You know?
We can explain what caused it after we fix it. So it can be...
Let you know then when I do find
it. Well, let me ask you a question. What part of town do you live in?
Close to Greenwell, but I was afraid to drive to Greenwell because it was shuttering, and I'm at one of the companies that was a tire company that was just recently bought out.
So
they are going to honor the warranty.
Okay.
Because it was recent.
Okay. Well, all of those tire companies that have recently been purchased were all friends of mine, and I'm very happy for them because all of us are of the age that we want to retire. So to have somebody walk in and write you a big check and buy lock, stock, and barrel your shop is the dream of all of us, although that's not going to happen because we're probably like you guys, where there's a second generation behind us. And so, but I understand, and I've been told that they've promised that they're going to honor all the warranties and all the work from before, and I'm hoping that that's the case, and if that's the case, then I'm real happy.
You know, for us in our shop, when they come in and it's acting up, that's a bonus for us, because a lot of times we get them in and they're intermittent, which is the worst to try to get it to act up, but like in his case, for us it'd be a piece of cake to get in and find out when it's acting up.
And that, except for Monday mornings and Friday afternoons for obvious reasons, but any other time we can handle that, and I think you would agree.
Right.
Yeah. Not Monday mornings and Friday nights. But if the thing's missing, then just pull up, put it in park, leave it running, go inside and just say, you know, I'd like to bring this and have you fix it, but I want you to see it. It's happening right now. And if they say, I can't do that, then they told you all you need to know. You need to find another shop. So, all right, good luck.
Doesn't the place have a scanner for a 1995 vehicle?
Well, the scanner's not going to really help us. The scanner looks at codes and stereo stream data. I don't know, would a 95 show an engine miss, give us any data on the engine miss? None at all.
Not at all.
So we wouldn't have any information, so the scanner's not going to help us fix your car. You're going to have a gray-haired guy.
Yeah, this goes back to basics.
Yeah, thank you very much. Goes back to basics. All right, well, anyway, thank you very much, Rick. We got five lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And I'll tell you about another good shop in town that's Action Auto, is I-17 in Deer Valley. In 1983, Tom, who owns Action Auto, was working for a guy who sold those big engine analyzers. You remember, Bob, when people would say, they bring their car in and say, can you put it on the scope?
Yeah.
And the scope was going to tell you
everything.
Yeah, it would tell you everything that was wrong with that car.
Yeah.
Now, there was two kinds of scopes. Do you remember what they were?
Well, I know I had the Sun.
Okay, and then there was the Bear.
Bear.
And then there was another one, which is what John Rang sold. And it wasn't a Sun. Yes. It was another one. And it was the big box scope. Mm-hmm. And so Tom was selling scopes during that period of time, the first time I met him in 1983. Well, since then, he's transitioned out of the sales and into the car repair. But he's a good guy, and I've known him, like I said, for a heck of a long time. So if you're up near I-17 in Deer Valley, he served Deer Valley and North Phoenix since 1983. He's a good guy, and he has ASE Master Technician. So if you'd like, stop there. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And Bob and Ellen are here from Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. And I'll turn off the speakers again. I'm sorry. Do you hear me talking?
I hear you talking.
Yeah. All right. Well, then say something. My goodness, say something. During the break, we have lots of stories like this, but I'm going to tell you a story that I heard not too long ago. Somebody says that they have a leak detection problem, and what we're talking about is we're supposed to suck the fumes off your fuel tank and run them through the engine again. So we have this system that we recycle the fumes off of your engine, off your gas tank. Okay, so your gas tank's closed, and we suck the fuel fumes and we take them forward to the motor and we burn them again, and then it comes out the tailpipe. So somebody had a leak in that system, in the evaporative system is what they call it.
They were setting a check engine light on for a leak, you know.
Okay. And then the first shop they went to, the quote was $600 in labor, and they had to drop the tank and do a bunch of work, $600. It ended up at a shop that dropped the tank in how much was it?
To
15 or 20 minutes?
Yeah. Well, we didn't have to drop the tank.
Okay.
The part that it was actually bad was on the side of the tank.
Okay. Okay.
I did not have to remove the tank.
Okay. So at the end of the day, you're looking at it and you say, it's this part here that has nothing to do with the removal of the tank, and I can have that piece off and on in 15 minutes off and 15 minutes on.
Right.
Okay. So the $600 kind of went out the window.
Well, parts and labor, I think it was $140.
Okay. But I think the question is, and to be fair, I'm sure that we've misdiagnosed things, but I wonder if they knew what it was, but they charged that $600, or would they have done all that $600 worth of work and then found out they still had the same problem?
They did a lot of backpedaling, because when we checked it out and said, no, you don't need to drop the tank, she called them on the phone and said, hey, look. And then they called her back and said, well, we apologize, we diagnosed it wrong. But in the same sense, she couldn't afford $600. Yeah. That's why she went for a second opinion.
So the second opinion is the end of the story here.
Right.
Just when you get hit in the face with a big one, then just go find someone else. And if she would have come in and you would have talked to her and she would have left, what would her quote-unquote checkout fee would have been? What would you?
I don't know.
On that one, we probably would have gone a full test on an evaporator leak with the smoke machine and so on to find it.
Okay.
So you're looking at $126.
Okay, so she would have spent $126 to find out, yes, they're right or yes, they're wrong, one or the other.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, I would assume that there's going to be some consideration made to somebody who's been doing business with you for 20 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine. So,
yes.
Okay.
We just gained a new customer because we got her confidence and said, hey, you know, Bob does that a lot, though. You know, we're not going to sell anything they don't need. And if there's a way of getting around it and it's just as well, that's what we're going to do. You know?
Well, We have a little bit more fun with that. If I think I can get away from playing with the customer, I'm going to give them a bill for the $600, and then I'm going to say, oh, never mind, and I'm going to tear it up and hand them the real bill for $140.
After they have the heart attack, you
yes.
mean?
And that's what Andy says. What are you going to do, Dad, if they just start yelling and screaming and walking out the door? I said, I'm going to chase them and tell them, I'm just kidding. Oh, gosh. Do we still have Greg?
Yes, sir.
Greg, go right ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have an emissions failure question on an 06 Malibu.
Okay.
Trying to decide if it's worth the possible expense. They gave us four codes. Car's approaching 200,000 miles. And it's one of the codes, cylinder 3 misfiring, fuel lever sensor circuit high output or high input. And I don't know how to translate that and determine if it's worth taking to a shop.
Wait a minute. Did you fail emissions? Is that what started all of this?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
failed emissions.
Okay. Well, we'd much rather just know what the emissions were at the time that they tested them. That would tell us a whole bunch more than anything else. Is it a CO failure or a hydrocarbon failure?
What year was this?
06.
06. Yeah. Okay.
06.
Yeah. So they just got codes on that year.
Okay.
So you have just a fuel.
I have the paper.
Okay, but he's right though, and I'm wrong. They didn't probe your tailpipe. No, they tailpipe, just plugged in underneath your dash.
So the fuel level sensor only has to do with your fuel gauge. It doesn't have anything to do with drivability. But your misfire, that needs to be gone after. What you said there was two more codes?
Yeah, system 2-lane, bank 2.
Okay.
And the fourth one was evaporative emission control system leak detected.
Okay. Yeah, you've got four problems, but one's a misfire. The leak can, the vacuum leak, lean problem can also be your misfire. But your evaporator system, that's another totally different system that's failing, and it's a matter of running a test on that. So you've got three other, or actually four issues that he needs to go after.
But here, what we're saying is this. We're going to go after the evaporative test first. Because if we've got a lean condition, it can be caused by the failure of an evaporative part of the system. So we're going to fix the evaporative first, and then we're going to go see if we have a lean code after we clear the codes and go take it for a quick test drive. We're also going to be able to determine, because if we have a vacuum leak in the emissions or in the evaporative system, that's going to cause a lean condition at the engine, which is going to cause a lean misfire, right?
Correct.
And so the misfire is the last one we want to go after. But as far as quoting is concerned, I'll quote you like everybody else. It's $100 to $175 worth of diagnostic, and sometimes we fix it for that, and sometimes we don't.
Can I tell them about a program out there?
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
We're one of the garages that do it for the state of Arizona. It's through ADEQ, and you pay the first $100, and believe it or not, they pick up the next $900
for the repair.
And we test them, we repair them, and we take them through emissions for you. So when you get it back, you've already got it passed. If it goes over, say, $1,000, then Bob would call, or any of the shops would call and say, hey, if you don't want to stay in the program, sometimes we get them in there, they need a lot of work. You just owe us $75 for the checkout. So it's a win-win.
So your risk is $75
right.
on the front side.
Right. And we don't make any more money one way or the other, so.
But you're billing the state. The state has emissions money, and they're actually paying you to help assist this person's car. But the best part about it that I like about this program is you fix it, then you go down and test it.
We do.
And that they get the car back, and there's no more emissions lines or nothing. You've already proven that you fixed it because it passed emissions.
Right. And the hidden thing is, there's no hidden thing, I should say. It's to better the air quality. That's what it's about.
Okay, we got to go, but if you want more information, call Ellen at Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and she'll explain how that does. And she also has the list of shops throughout the state or the city that have it as well.
Absolutely.
There's only about 8 or 10 of them?
They've extended. They extended. They brought more because they went from a higher amount. So they've extended to more shops.
But
you
can give her the numbers for them.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anyway, 602-508-0960 if you want to talk about cars. We'll be back right after this. Well, Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My guests are Bob and Ellen from Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob and I both have gray hair. And we both have a little bit of hair growing out of our ears, and we have a little fingernails with the, we got dirty hands, and we got certain areas of the, our index finger that just is permanently tattooed with little lines of grease that won't come out unless we break out the steel wool pads or the brushes. And you do that when you go to communion. So, well, we've been around the block a few times. Anyway, we're going to go to Dan. He's been waiting, and we're going to take him. And if you'd like to join us, the lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Dan, thank you for holding. How can we help you?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I've got a 94 GMC three-quarter ton pickup. And I thought, since you're another gray-haired guy like me, maybe you can help.
Okay.
It was registered as a construction vehicle, so I have to go in annually for the emission test.
Okay.
And 2 years ago in September, I got a recall notice that they handed me saying that my front seat back recliner was in need of attention repair. You know, it said contact your GMC dealer. Of course, I procrastinated and didn't do it. And so finally the seat did break, and I called the local GMC dealer in Scottsdale and just haven't had any callback results. I've actually called them like three different times, you know, asking for the same service writer. And, you know, he's talked to me twice, but I've never gotten a call back as to, you know, where we're at with, you know, I know it's an old vehicle, but what do I do? Do I go to a different dealer or?
Well, certainly. I mean, that common sense would say that you'd call a couple of other dealers and just I think you skipped the story, okay? You might be scaring people with all the different moving parts of the story. I got a recall. I know I'm a little late. I didn't deal with it promptly, but I've got a recall on the seat, and when can I bring it in, and do you want the recall number? I think that's where you start. Now, the federal government's in charge of the recalls, so you could go to the NHTSA, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration site, and you could tell on them that you can't get anybody to take care of it, but I would call more than one dealer before you called NHTSA. So I'd call a couple of them, but I think you just need to change your story just a little bit.
Do I need to drive in to the repair center versus calling and just asking for a service writer?
Well, the issue is now we have people that keep us away from, because what are you going to tell us that I haven't already? I just said it in 20 seconds.
Right.
I got a recall for the seat.
Right.
When do you want me to bring it in?
Right.
So, okay. but you're not going to be able to talk to a technician, and not even at our shop you're not going to, but you have to make it easy, because if you come with a bunch of baggage and you want to talk to a service writer or you want to talk to the appointment people, and that scares some of those big guys.
Okay.
Alrighty. All right. Well, good luck to you. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you have a Chevrolet dealership that you deal with all the time and that you like?
We use Sands.
Sands? Okay. And you know what? I've heard good things about Sands.
Yeah,
what about, is Courtesy still around over on Camelback?
Yeah.
Courtesy's been around for 100 years, but Central Phoenix, Sands or Courtesy is probably the two good guys, and that's probably where I'd go. But good luck to you, Dan. And they can't just stop. There's going to be parts available, and the recall has to be affected. So it's something that needs to be done. It's just sometimes that the way to get there is a little bit more convoluted.
Just get their attention and say, it's a recall, and I need help.
Yep, I want to bring it in,
and
here's the recall number, and would you make sure that you have the parts necessary so that I don't have to come back? And thank you very much, and be done with it. The hard part is the communication factor. I think the worst part for me is when the wife comes in and tells me what the husband told her to say.
Oh, yeah.
and all I want to do is talk to the husband. And there's a polite way to get around that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, ma'am, could you have him call me? Here's my name and my phone number. Have him call me. I have a couple of questions. And because he's the primary driver, I'd really like to talk to him.
I think what gets Bob the most is when Bob talks to a lot of the wives and they say, oh, after 10 or 15 minutes explaining what they need, you got to talk to my husband.
Oh.
So then they go, because they don't understand. You know, which is understandable.
Right.
I know a lot of things I might not understand, too, so he's got to explain
it. It's all about communication.
Yeah.
It is. Because sometimes you get into these, I was at a stoplight for 5 minutes, and then I turned right, and then I went about another mile, and then it started acting up, and I go, whoa, what has that got to do with anything?
and you're right. And sometimes, though, that's benefit because they're saying, da, 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 da. And, oh, by the way, there's some blue smoke from this part of the hood. Okay. Yeah. And then you go, okay, well, then maybe we're on
the right track.
Yeah. But they don't know that how much is too much.
Yeah.
But I think they would be better served by just saying, this is the problem I got, mm-hmm. and do you want me to give you some symptoms that I think may or may not be related? The best part of that is the give and take.
Yeah.
Well, what about this? How does it start cold? It starts cold fine. Okay, so you think you have a bad fuel pressure regulator, and the guy at the auto parts store said you need a fuel pressure regulator, and that would create a problem where you'd have extended crank cold in the morning because we've lost all the fuel pressure. Yeah. So we have to build all this fuel pressure back. But you say you hit the key, boom, it starts right up. Yeah. Okay, do you want me to go in that direction, or do you want me to go in the direction I want to go?
I know
in?
When I'm writing it up, I have to get very technical, because if I don't get technical, I've got a tech coming in asking me those questions. So when they have a problem, is it cold, is it hot, are you going down the road, how fast are you going, how often does it do it? So it helps the tech. The more information they give us, the customer, the easier it is for them to diagnose what's going on.
There's a tremendous savings, and to take it to the next step, the vibration. Does it shake the seat of your pants or the steering wheel?
Right,
does it
exactly.
shake the passenger side seat? Does it do it? Is it speed related?
Right.
So does it get worse the faster you go? No, you get to 60 and it goes away. Okay,
yeah.
We like that.
I do the same thing. I get very technical. It helps the techs out.
But that's the benefit of all of your experience at the front counter.
Right.
We have
it's
a couple
also called patience.
Yeah, it is, too. Yeah, that's a good name for it.
Mine's gone.
Yeah. That's a good name for it. That's a really good... Because you just said right now, it's all of a sudden we're going on this arm over here, and we're talking about all this stuff that can't possibly have anything to do with why your air conditioning's blowing out of the floor. You know what I mean?
I prefer to ask the questions, you know, and then have them rattle on what, you know, I mean, it does help, and I do want them to tell me, but if I ask them, it helps me mm-hmm. then know what, you know, we're looking for what mechanic to give it to.
There was this old guy the one time that he put his hand out in front of himself, and he'd point to the middle of the palm of his hand, and he goes, there's your problem. I have no idea which finger is going to take me to where
it's going
to
go.
But if you'll talk to me, we can maybe narrow it down to two fingers or one finger or something like that. Because I think on a drivability problem, Bob, you're going to agree it's either spark or fuel or temperature related.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be
almost
one of those.
Always.
Yeah. So the question is, oh, that's easy, spark. Yeah, that's easy. You're tail end, it's easy. We got cam sensors and crank sensors, and we got coil over ignition. We've got no spark plug wires on cars anymore. We have computer operation of the spark and opening and closing the gate. We've got boots that we can't see that can be leaking electricity. We've got spark plug holes that are full of water that we don't even know anything about. And we've got all these problems that we have to track down. And it isn't as easy as it was in 58.
Every day is a new experience,
yeah.
I tell you.
But in reality, the car that today runs the same as the 58 Chevy. It's just that it's got a computer delivering spark and fuel, and at the right time. That's the only difference.
Yeah.
It's the same process.
Still
it's
basic combustion engine.
What is the four strokes? What's that? It's suck, boom, what are the four? Suck is the intake stroke.
Yeah, you got compression.
And then compression, and then power. And exhaust. And so those are the four strokes of a four-stroke engine. So there's, you guys were both looking at me, but you were thinking the nasty thing.
Because there's kind of wondering where you were going right here.
I wasn't.
In the vernacular of us guys back in the 60s, the four strokes were defined as something different. But really, it's an intake stroke where we suck fuel into the cylinder. And then we compress that, and now the piston goes back up to the top. And when it gets to the top, the spark plug fires. There's this tremendous explosion that pushes the piston down. That's called the power stroke. Then when the piston gets at the bottom, it has to go back up, but we have to open the exhaust valve so we can take all that trash and move it out the tailpipe. So that's the four strokes of a four-stroke car. And there's no two-stroke cars out there anymore, is there?
Not that I...
And the two-stroke is a motorcycle that goes ying, 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 ying. That's a two-stroke engine where we fire the spark plug every other stroke.
My age, it was a John Deere.
I remember the John Deere. Do you remember trying to get those things started on a cold morning?
Oh, jeez.
You might as well just pray to God the night before for as long as you were awake.
Yeah.
Gosh almighty.
But they ran all day long.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Why was it so hard to get it started?
It was the fuel atomization because the fuel's already mixed with oil, so it's not like it's ready to fire and it's cold, and the gasoline is cold, and we're hoping that we can ignite vapor but not liquid gasoline. And so we have all these moving parts, and it's basically the old days when you had the crank at the front of the car and you'd crank it over. You didn't even have a 50-50 chance of getting it to fire up.
No.
It was just, you just worked on it until you got it to go da 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 da, and then you go, okay, I'm close.
one more time,
and you'd crank it, and pretty soon you'd go da 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 da, and then you hope for that's what you hope for, isn't that right?
Well, the John Deere was a little different though. It went
You're right.
We had many a morning trying to start them in Kansas at 20 degrees.
You could get them to go toot, but you couldn't go get them to go past the toot. It was toot, and then you wanted to go toot, and then it would go. But once you started getting the toots in a row, then you had the motor running. But up until that point, it was just toot.
Well, okay, what does it do today then? It just turn the key in and start right up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there's no fun in that.
Well, I think the next time you buy her a new car, we'll put a crank at the front of it, and we'll let her wind up her own engine.
I'll let him warm it up before I get in it.
She likes to start it from in the house.
Oh, isn't that a nice part of new cars?
Yeah. I do like that.
It's just started up outside.
Warmed up.
Yeah. And folks, most of the time people know that the doors are locked and stuff like that. And, you know, the neighbor's not going to be able to hop in your truck and drive it away because the steering is still locked and all that other kind of stuff. But it is a very valuable thing up in north. It's not uncommon for me to start the truck. The problem is sometimes when I'm leaving north to come down here, it's at 4 o'clock in the morning and I got my diesel truck at high idle out in the driveway. And I've got three or four neighbors that are, you know, within a quarter mile. And so it's a little noisy.
Oh, okay, it's just Mark leaving.
But the dogs like it because when they get in the truck, it's kind of toasty.
Oh, and, nice and warm. And we had a neighbor that decided to leave his key in the car, key fob in the car. Uh-huh. You don't do that because somebody stole it.
We had somebody, a friend of mine, the other day that hid his key in his car and at the airport. And they have figured out a way to figure that out.
Yeah.
And so they drive around, and all of a sudden, his car is not there anymore. Mm-hmm. And I said, and he actually is a retired policeman. And I said, do you feel kind of stupid? And he hung up on me, and he called me a name. He used bad words. I said, okay, I feel stupid for you. I'll do it for you. Anyway, thank you for spending your Saturday with me. For the rest of you, the most important question you can ask your shop is this a guess or a fix? So when the shop gives you an estimate, it's either a guess or a fix, or it's more diagnostic time. But you need to know that, because sometimes my industry represents a fix when it's really a guess, and you need to know that because continuing to repair is going to cost more money. I'll see you next Saturday right here on KKNT 960 AM.